Hello and welcome to South Asia Chat, a podcast brought to you by the Institute of South Asian Studies at the National University of Singapore. I'm your host, Winifred Gurung, research analyst at the Institute. Three northeast states of India, Nagaland, Tripura, and Meghalaya, went to polls in February 2023. In Tripura, the Bharatiya Janata Party, the BJP, and its regional ally, the Indigenous People's Front of Tripura, won 33 seats. In Nagaland, the BJP and its ally, the Nationalist Democratic Progressive Party, secured 37 seats. In Meghalaya, the BJP has formed a coalition government with the ruling National People's Party. To discuss this in detail, we have with us Professor Kamkhan Swanhausen, professor and head of the Department of Political Science at the University of Hyderabad, India. Welcome to the podcast, Prof. Swan.
Thank you for having me on board.
So my first question is, what is your take on the rise of the BJP and the growing acceptance of the party in Nagaland and Meghalaya, despite the states being Christian majority?
I think the rise of the BJP has to be qualified in the context of Northeast India, especially in Nagaland, Meghalaya and Tripura for that matter, because if you look closely at the statistics that is available, you'll find that the BJP has rather consolidated its electoral presence in Nagaland, but in Meghalaya it has not been able to make much inroad. And it has also somehow consolidated its position in Tripura, although the seat share of the BJP has decreased by 4-4, as well as in terms of the voter turnout. You also witness similar decline in terms of the vote share in Tripura. So in that sense, one can say that the BJP has somehow consolidated its position in Nagaland and Tripura. One of the ways in which we can possibly look at this is that the BJP, as it were, is a product of factional politics in Nagaland and, for that matter, in Tripura. In 2018, when the BJP, for example, entered into the electoral fray in Tripura, you have 17 Congress who defected, and all of them, contested in the party ticket of the BJP, and they eventually won, right? 10 of them. So in that sense, it is a function of factional or defection politics, or what you call political turn codes, as it were. So in that sense, I think the BJP performance is something that has to be nuanced and qualified in this respect. What explains for the rise and the consolidation of the BJP? As I said, one is the defection politics which is at play, which is very important. The second important factor, which I think is important, especially in the context of Nagaland, where the BJP has not been able to make significant inroads in eastern Nagaland, despite the fact that it has come up with impressive doleouts, as it were, of developments, promise of setting up infrastructure, of schools, of university, of professional institutes, and so forth, and giving and catering to the needs and demands and aspiration of farmers, of entrepreneurs, of women, especially reserving 33% for women, given that Nagaland has, insignificant women's representation in local bodies, as well as in the state assembly. Remember that this is the first time that the Nagaland Legislative Assembly returned, to member of Legislative Assembly for the first time, of which we'll come to that later. In that sense, the BJP's promise somehow has not been, able to consolidate its hold in eastern Nagaland, given the fact that you'll have only 4 seats, out of the 20 seats which return the BJP MLAs. So in that sense, it's a kind of a mixed, response, as it were. So the BJP consolidation in Northeast India, in that sense, is still very limited, and it will depend upon how, fictional politics or the fiction politics might play out. That's one part. The second part is also a question of leadership. If you look at the case of Nagaland, for example, the BJP has an influential leader in the form of Y. Patton. But Y. Patton is still playing second fiddle to Nephew Rayo, To what extent would Waipatan, for example, take over, assume leadership position, given that, you know, he is in his mid-60s, and Nephew Rayo has already crossed 72 years. So in that sense, if Nephew Rayo could consolidate his charisma and popular appeal across Nagaland for at least the next 5 to 10 years, it does not look like that the BJP would further consolidate and expand its base in Nagaland, and for that matter, in Meghalaya. And in Meghalaya is a case in which the BJP performance had never been impressive. It has been lackluster. And this has to do with the fact that, you know, dominant section of the community in Meghalaya are not favorable to the consolidation and for that matter penetration of the BJP and its Sangh Pariwar in Meghalaya. So Meghalaya and Nagaland in that sense also represent a kind of, you know, a deep, you know, psychological as well as social revulsions against the entry and penetration of BJP, because it represents a different ideology as well as cultural orientation, which seeks to obliterate and need not necessarily, you know, respect or for that matter, seeks to accommodate cultural diversities, despite the political rhetoric that, you know, it is okay, fine with beef eating practices of the Khasis or the Garos and the Zaintias in Meghalaya or the Nagas in Nagaland. But still, sizable as well as dominant section of the Nagas as well as the people in Meghalaya are not favorable to, you know, the BJP penetration in these states.
In the future, do you see a possibility of the BJP expanding its support in Nagaland and Meghalaya and becoming less reliant on regional parties?
I think this question would depend, as I said, on the nature of the faction politics. To what extent would, you know, some of these parties in power, look at Meghalaya, for example, would the NPP be able to hold its fort in terms of, you know, consolidating its position by holding rein over its member who would not be defecting if there is a permutation or change at the national level, right? That would depend on how well would the BJP be hold in check. That's one. And similarly, as I said, in the case of Nagaland, it also depends upon how well would Nephew Rayo's charismatic leadership appeal across Naga society. To the extent that if Nephew Rayo succeed in appealing across, you know, cross-section of Naga societies, remember that NDPP has performed much better than the BJP both in what we call the progressive districts as well as the backward districts. So in that sense, I think I do not see any dilution in the appeal and charisma of Nephew Rayo in the short run. And that in fact bespeaks of the limited possibilities of the BJP. That's one. The second is, to what extent would what Arkutung Longkumar calls the Greater India Experiment might succeed in this part of Northeast India? That is to say that to what extent would the BJP be successful in appropriating local idioms, local culture, as well as values, which would in a way, you know, open up new space for the expansion and consolidation of the BJP. Remember that the BJP has entered extensively through the network of entrepreneurship, through business, or through educational institution, not only in Nagaland and Meghalaya, but also in other parts of Northeast India. And it is a very extensive network, socio-cultural, educational network. To what extent would these Sangh Pariwar networks and associated, you know, formations be successful in garnering support base and translating, you know, social as well as educational and economic interests of the Northeast people into electoral fortunes of the BJP remains to be seen. So to what extent would the BJP be successful in translating all these, you know, social, cultural, educational influence that it has in Northeast India into electoral turnouts would hold the key as to whether the BJP would be able to expand or consolidate its position in Meghalaya, Nagaland, and other parts of Northeast India.
So where do you think the opposition, particularly the Congress, stands in the region? Why do you think the party is losing ground?
One of the reasons why the Congress has not been able to, you know, hold its fort is the fact that it lacks leadership which appeal, you know, across communities. In the case of Nagaland, for example, you have S.A. Zamir, you know, who was the tallest leader, who held a position of chief minister, say, for 5 times. And this is on the first time when Nephew Raya would eclipse in terms of, you know, the number of days that he holds the reign of the chief minister, say, more than 15 years. So in that sense, there is no second rung, you know, Congress leadership, which would be able to take on the NDPP or the BJP behemoth, as it were, in Nagaland. That explains one very formidable reason why the Congress has not been able to come up with an impressive opposition against, you know, the rise and consolidation of NDPP and the BJP in Nagaland. The second is that given that the Congress has been out of power since, you know, 2003 in Nagaland, it has not been able to, you know, have the resources, the wherewithal, the manpower and the organizational network which are required and essential, you know, to put up a formidable competition against the NPF in the 2000s and the NDPP since 2015 to 2018. So in that sense, the lack of organizational strength of the Congress and the lack of resources also, you know, adversely implicate on the, you know, ability of the of the Congress, you know, to compete with the BJP. That's one, right? In the case of Meghalaya, Mukul Sangma, you know, the one of the foremost leaders of the Congress, in effect defected, as you know, to the All India Trinamool Congress. And as you know, the Congress has not been able to impressively perform or revive its, you know, past glory, as it were, in Meghalaya. So again, the same, more or less the same reasons: lack of leadership, rampant defection as well as factional politics in Meghalaya, and the lack of resources, you know, to compete against against the NPP there, in effect, account for the inability of the Congress, you know, to fight against. And this is, in effect, also a function of how limited money power can also win elections for parties. Look at, for example, the Congress chief, Vincent Pala, who is the richest, you know, MLA candidate, who is the Congress boss, who was defeated by a first-time MLA. In effect, this is the first time that an MLA from Janatiya Hills elect, you know, a woman member of Legislative Assembly. In effect, if a political novice could defeat a very rich and influential, you know, Congress leader like Vincent Pala, it also sent out, you know, a huge demoralizing impact on the Congress cadre, who have been struggling against the odds of organizational strength, lack of leadership, or lack of resources, in effect, to contend with the NPP and other political formation in Meghalaya.
Can you also throw some light on women's participation in these polls and how has it changed over the years?
I think these polls are very significant for two or three counts in terms of the sheer numbers of women elected. It is unprecedented because in the case of Tripura, for the first time, you have 9 members of Legislative Assembly who are women elected for the first time, right? This is the highest number. In the case of Nagaland, you have 2 women elected for the first time. And again, this is the first time in the 14th legislative elections in Nagaland. So this is quite significant. And this is also significant to the extent that both in in all the 3 states, in Tripura, in Nagaland, and Meghalaya, you have 1 member each inducted into the cabinet portfolios, right? So out of the 12 cabinet positions in Meghalaya and Nagaland, you have now 1 cabinet minister from women who are women. And in Tripura, out of the 9 cabinet ministers, you have 9, you have, you know, 1 women cabinet. So this is significant, especially in the case of Nagaland, because despite the fact that Nagaland, for example, has impressive records in terms of literacy rate, in terms of women's participation in the 14 member of Legislative Assembly elections, remember that in 9 of the 14 assembly elections, women have outperformed the male folks in terms of the electoral turnout, right? But still, no women got elected in the preceding rounds of elections in Nagaland. And it is very interesting that for the first time, you have two women who were successful in securing not only the seat in the Legislative Assembly, but one of them eventually becoming, cabinet minister. So in that sense, it in effect is an important historic, landmark elections. And I hope that this trend would continue in the future.
So lastly, I want to ask you about the Act East policy under PM Narendra Modi. So do you see the election results as an enabling factor to the central government's Act East policy?
I think this can be answered in terms of one is the party system, right? If Act East policy or institutions or public policies are in effect outcomes of say party system, in effect there is a literature which suggests that there is a correlationship between the congruence or incongruence in party systems and policy outcomes, right? If you have a congruence in party system, tendencies are that it is more favorable to cooperative, collaborative change. So to the extent that you have more or less congruent party system, both not only in Nagaland and Tripura, but also in Meghalaya, given that NDDP has co-opted the BJP and the BJP has now become a partner of the, despite the fact that, the fallout just before the elections contested separately. You have more or less a semblance of congruence party both at the national as well as at the subnational level. And in that sense, it would be auguring well for ACT's policy to the extent that there will be policy convergence, there will be collaboration as well as cooperation between the federal as well as the subnational units. That's one. But I think just to narrow down our focus and analysis to congruence in the party system would be a very naive as well as limited analytical tool, because you have to factor in, a set of other factors. For example, the social factors, as it were. You have a lot of, community constellations. You have a lot of diversities in this. Nagaland, for example, has 16 recognized tribes, right? Which, in effect, have their own distinctive tribal affiliations, tribal loyalties, and tribal politics of their own. And if, for example, ACT's policy could not generate enough support and solidarity across Naga tribes, for example, given that Nagaland and Meghalaya, for that matter, Tripura, has now been transformed into zones of extractive economy, you have possibilities of social as well as community backlash, given that many of these states, not only these three states, but also most of these Indian states, are in effect marked by constellation of social forces, right? So all of these social forces have their own customary laws, which govern ownership of property, including land ownership, right? Transfer or acquisition of power. So in that extent, the BJP government have to contend with this constellation of social force, if at all it were to be effective and efficiently, conducting the terms of ACT's policy in Northeast India. That's another interesting point. Another interesting, as well as impelling reason that the BJP has to contend with is in terms of, the diverse area of political formations which have their own regionalist agendas as well as ideologies. And remember that the United Democratic Front or the other formations in Meghalaya or in the Eastern Naga People's Organization in Eastern Nagaland, who are not party to these elections, for example, initially they were vehemently resisting the holding of elections because they in fact considered that unless there is a conclusive, resolution to their demand for Frontier Nagaland, they will not join in the electoral fray, so and so forth. So you have sizable social forces which are continue to be very influential and dominant in these states. And if the BJP succeed in co-opting or for that matter placating to some extent, this social force, prominent influential social force, I think the BJP bumpy road to Ekis policy would somehow be easier, would be smoothened. But if, on the contrary, the BJP has not succeeded in forming the social as well as political coalitions across the board in the three states, it would really be skating on a very precarious as well as thin ice. Finally, if you look at the kind of institutional architecture that is in place, for example, you still have very limited land custom station, for example. You know, you have around 40 which are identified, and very few of them are operational. For example, in Meghalaya, Nagaland, and Tripura, you have only one integrated checkpost, which are upgraded, as well as which are still yet to be fully modernized. So you still have infrastructural bottlenecks which stand in the way of effective implementation of Ekis policy. Because if Ekis policy were to take off in right earnest or in full harness, you have to have minimum threshold of infrastructural development. Somehow, noticing there has not been successful, despite the fact that you have industrial policies framed in 1997, subsequently modified in 2007, which has not somehow succeeded in attracting enough investment and capital, unlike other states like Uttarakhand or in South India, right? So the result of which is that there are issues of law and order, there are issues of administrative efficiency or effectiveness, because there are so many social forces to contend with, the possibilities of fractionalization which spoil the whole process of peace, so and so forth. So these are complex sets of factors which, in effect, the BJP has to contend with, not just the political calculus, as it were, if at all Ekis policy were to be effectively implemented after these elections. So to what extent the BJP has succeeded in navigating this complex terrain would, in effect, determine its success in navigating Ekis policy in Northeast India.
Thank you very much for the sharp insights and analysis, Professor Swan.
Thank you so much, Winnie, for having me on board.
You were listening to South Asia Chat. To learn more about our work, visit us at isas.nus.edu.sg. You can also follow us on social media. We are on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram.